When I say the word politics, what immediately comes to mind for you?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, like, saying things without actually saying things.
Rich white people.
I really don't want to have a conversation about it. Politics is politics.
Honestly, just lots of people arguing about some very interesting topics.
The first thing that comes to my mind is Judith Collins.
And how would you describe politics to a mate?
Conflicts.
Farming.
Colours as well.
Indecisiveness.
It's like a game. People never want to say what, you know, their real intentions are, I guess. It's something that I want to get more into, but it's just like I don't really know where to start.
Start here with the Not at the Dinner Table podcast.
To discuss all things political that you're not allowed to at dinner.
Especially if your granddad's coming over. Jen, we've reached our final episode. I can't quite believe it, actually.
Yeah.
It's been a very full-on 6 weeks.
I mean, my body is telling me, I can believe it, I am exhausted.
Yeah.
However,
six weeks of political work,
kind of proud of us.
Yeah. The show is not quite over yet. We still have this one to go. This week we're looking at the Conversion Practices Prohibition Bill.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all things rainbow from two straight people.
A really good look.
Yeah.
Which is why, I was going to say you won't be hearing too much from us, but actually, you'll probably be hearing from us more than usual. But we'll explain a bit more about that later. We're speaking this week with Green MP Dr. Elizabeth Kerekere, and hearing a little bit more from co-leader of Te Pāti Māori, Debbie Ngāre Wepeke, because she had some cool stuff to say when we interviewed her a few weeks ago, and we thought we'd bring it back.
But you might be thinking, why do we have a whole episode dedicated to this particular community? Estimates now state that 15 to 20% of the New Zealand population are part of the LGBTQ+ community.
So the likelihood of knowing someone or being someone who is affected by the issues that we're having a look at today is pretty high.
And the most recent piece of legislation going through Parliament that affects the LGBTQ+ community is the Conversion Practices Prohibition Bill, which is set up to ban conversion therapy and practices in New Zealand.
We chatted first with Dr. Elizabeth Kerekere from the Greens to hear what she had to say.
Kia ora, I'm Elizabeth Kerekere. I whakapapa on my father's side to the Te Rāwhiti and on my mother's side to County Clare and County Tipperary in Ireland. I'm a Green Party MP. I've been in the job for a year, and it's quite exciting. Part of my portfolios is health, whānau, ora, Māori development and rainbow. So I like to always weave those things together.
How prevalent is the issue of conversion therapy in New Zealand?
We know that this is happening right now to minimum a few hundred young people, and that doesn't count older people, people who didn't answer the survey, and that is happening across the country. It's not like it's all just in little rural places. It's happening across the country. Quick background. When we did our petition at the beginning of the year, and we had nearly 160,000 signatures in 1 week, which was mind-blowing. So many people wrote to me and made comments in their submission to say that they didn't realise this was still happening and they were horrified. I was surprised to find how many still anti-lesbian and gay and anti-trans lobbyists people were still out there. They were saying, oh, it's not the serious stuff. That doesn't happen anymore. So they go, oh, you know, the electric therapy treatments, you know, the really bad stuff doesn't happen. But the fact is, we know from two major pieces of research, counting ourselves on trans and non-binary people, that this is happening right now. And we know from counting ourselves that because of the discrimination against us, rainbow people have really high rates of suicide and depression and self-harm, which is awful and revolting. I'm hoping that as these laws move through, as society starts to change, those numbers will lessen.
A lot of people are like, oh, what is a conversion practice? What will be counted as a conversion practice?
I think you hit on something quite important, because conversion practices is not properly defined in the Act. Many people, didn't matter what size of the argument, were saying it's not defined. You need to actually say what this means. At its heart, though, and what is in the bill, is it's a practice which is trying to change who someone is by whatever means. I think it's important they actually state and give examples of some of those means, because some of it is trying to pray over people to change them. We support, absolutely, people going to their place of worship and asking for support to help them through difficult decisions. to figure out what they want to do, and people pray for them. That's the mechanism of support in those environments. Absolutely fantastic. However, when somebody comes to them and goes, oh, you need to take this away from me, I don't want to be this thing, the point shouldn't be less, let's do that, let's take this away. The point should be, why do you want to take it away?
If someone goes to their church, if they're a part of one, and they go, hey, I need some help, I'm really struggling to be gay in this community because, you know, there's all this stuff that says I can't be, and kind of praying about that, that's cool, that's fine. But it's absolutely, when someone goes, hey, I'm having these kind of concerns about this, and then say the pastor or the whoever it is that they've gone to goes, let's pray the gay out of you. That's what the conversion practice is.
Absolutely. That's what we want to try and get rid of.
In the Birth, Death and Marriages Relationships Bill, it says a 16-year-old's old enough to make their own decisions around self-identification. However, in the Conversion Practices Bill, anyone who performs conversion practice on an individual under 18 is prosecuted. So are those under 18 old enough to make their own decisions around that or not? So what are we kind of talking about there? We've got 16 on one hand and 18 on the other hand.
Absolutely. This is one of the hotly contested and continues to be contested parts of the bill. From our point of view, we agree with submitters who say we should just get rid of the age thing. We say this act is a crime, regardless of who you do it to and what age that person is. So we're saying it shouldn't be on the person to prove the level of harm and how bad it is. It should all be on the person doing it, because they shouldn't be doing it, full stop. And so we want to remove that section, so it shifts the focus back on the actual crime, the person doing it, what should happen to them. It's the fact that people, when you're in it, don't always notice it, don't always realize what's happening. I've had friends that were presenting just this year in their 30s and realizing that what happened to them when they were young was actually conversion practices. And it's only when you kind of step back, and sometimes that can be years later, and you look back at it and go, oh, wow, that was really, really bad. And I didn't know. And people get a lot of guilt because they say, I should have said it was wrong. I was colluding in my own harm. And that's just not true.
Where are we at with the conversion therapies practice bill? We're currently in the select committee stage, I believe.
We had 106,300 submissions. But just so you realise too, we get all of the submissions and then our officials go through them. They have to check for certain things. They're not naming people, or if they have, they've got permission to do that. Also, lots of people made form submissions where they just followed a template, put their name on it. So people think that that works, or by sheer force of numbers, it will make a difference. It does not. It's only counted as one, even if 20,000 people sign something. And it's great that those people agree, but it's effectively like a petition. Then they're not saying their honest, own heartfelt contribution. So we are listening to thousands of people submitting. And so we've got four subcommittees hearing them. And we are meeting every week, all day Friday, I think. I'm on subcommittee C. And we're here until the end of the year to get them all done.
Just for our listeners, how can they be more aware of these kind of rainbow issues?
I think if you just come into the world and take an approach that we are made up of many different cultures and identities, and to just be a person that any one of those people can be safe around, can be your friends, can be fun around you, because you accept people. And on one level, you can join organizations, you could do training, you can learn about things. You know, just, I always say, be a good human. Don't judge people. Everybody has space to be in this world. And sometimes you listening and being accepting of somebody might be the thing that saves their life.
As the old saying goes, there's two sides to every story, or more. But there are a lot of different perspectives to look at when it comes to legislation. One of the ones I wanted to take a look at, and that's why I've got Debbie Narewa Packer back in, is about Māori. I talked to her about the term takatāpoi and how it's used within the rainbow community. And do you want to define takatāpoi?
I'll try and give you an example. Takatāpoi, we don't have he or she here, IA, is for he or she. There's never been a differentiator for us in Māori language of whether you're he or she or you know, or whatever or nothing. It's just this is who I am. So I guess the extent of takatāpui for us is it's come from the 80s, but it is used by anyone who is gay, lesbian, bisexual, you know, transgender, intersex, or anyone that's part of the rainbow community. And I guess the whole way for us was realising that not only are the issues of being able to identify who I am and what I need, but we have some really harmful legislation in place that have made it okay for people to humiliate and torture and do sorts of things to take the takatāpui out of you. Like I say, I guess in our culture, everyone's everyone, and you know, we've got really early stories of love stories where it wasn't always about being heterosexual. There was love stories about men and men, and women, and the separation from tiki and tikanekai. It was lots of stories, but I guess there's some Western societies that are affected in government and in parliament that need to be dismantled, some practices, and it was a real honour to be a part of that.
Conversion therapy was something that was brought over in kind of colonisation.
Yeah, yeah. I keep trying to find other words for colonisation because it's just some people get really offended by it. I think, well, look, don't
there isn't another word.
There isn't another word. It is a part of people who are trying to reclaim their culture. When we understand what we're doing, then we can check ourselves. And it was a horrific practice, and it's just created so much heartache and suicides and which we call waka mōmori. It's been responsible for so much hurt.
Mm.
And I think one of the things that we must do in Parliament is dismantle that stops any human being from being able to live their full lives. And I think that was what it was doing. So it was real, and it was, again, like I said, with lots of emotions, but we're a little bit shocked by some of the parties that just didn't support it. We thought, wow.
Yeah.
And it was really, really shocking to see some parties like National not support it when it just creates so much harm. So much harm. There's so much desperation, for people to be able to live and be, fully who they are.
So I should probably explain why you're going to be hearing more from us in this episode than usual. And that's because interview planning, it has not gone the most smoothly. We've had a pretty good track record. 5 of these main episodes, and it's on the 6th one that things don't entirely go right. So we approached both Simon Bridges and Simeon Brown from the National Party to speak on this issue. Simon Bridges was too busy. He suggested we speak to Simeon Brown. He had 15 minutes available for us, but then the morning of that interview let us know that he was no longer available. And so we had another think and contacted Bob McCroskery from Family First, and he was not free to speak either. And so while it's not entirely ideal hearing their point of view from us instead of them directly, we're going to do our best to sum up their position on this. And so the first thing that we noticed was that Debbie said that National doesn't support this bill, but that's not entirely true, is it, Jen?
No, not quite. If you look at some of the stuff that National discussed in the Hansard, and if you watch some of the debates...
In the what?
The Hansard, so it's like the written up version of the debates that happen in Parliament. If you look through that, or if you actually watch Parliament TV, like I do sometimes, National supports the core idea of banning conversion therapy and the harm it causes, but they didn't vote for it at the first reading because they thought it wasn't clear enough. So Simon Bridges kind of highlighted this issue in a speech.
Parents should be allowed to be parents and to explore sexuality and gender with their children. But under this law, if a mum tells her 12-year-old son or daughter, Taiho, before you go on puberty blockers or other hormone treatment, wait till you're 18, that mum will be breaking the law. National believes there must
be an exemption for parents. They're very angry on the other side. But I just want to address them quite clearly. The definition in Clause 5 is incredibly broad, and there is nowhere in this bill any exemption for parents. It's important to note that this law is broader than sexual orientation. It also covers gender identity and expression. This latter area is more complex than the former. It can involve medical interventions, blockers, hormones, surgery. These treatments are innovative and experimental. They involve long-term risks and consequences. And in other countries, there are growing numbers of young people who've become adults and regret transitioning and seek to de-transition with mixed success. Do we really want the government intervening with the criminal law, 5 years in prison, in conversations and decisions about medical treatment and well-being that parents have and make with their children? I don't think so. And I don't think actually a majority of Kiwi parents do either. This bill lacks common sense. It's an ideological overreach.
Another perspective on this bill is that of some Christian groups, namely Family First, who do not support a ban on conversion therapy due to their concerns around criminalising parents, counsellors, carers or teachers who try to have these sort of faith-based discussions around the topic and whether it's even a prevalent enough issue to be made into a law in the first place.
As Minister of Justice Chris Farfoy and the Prime Minister have admitted in media interviews, a parent who promotes biological sex could be criminalised, but an activist who indoctrinates young children with the concept of gender fluidity and third gender will be celebrated. And this can and currently does happen in some schools without parental knowledge. And we cover this in detail in our written submission, paragraphs 62 onwards. It's a form of conversion therapy happening in our schools. Now, numerous reviews show the majority of children who are confused about their gender can also suffer from comorbid disorders such as depression and anxiety. And studies also show that anywhere from 75% to 98% of children who struggle with their sex as a boy or a girl come to accept their sex by adulthood. Now, I hear the claim made, oh, but the Attorney General has to approve any prosecution. It's a high bar. It's very unlikely that parents will get prosecuted. Well, that statement overlooks a fundamental issue, and that is the proposed legislation is criminalising conduct that should not be criminalised. And the New Zealand Law Society also rightly points out in their submission that the Attorney General's consent doesn't apply to complaints laid to the Human Rights Commission, and proceedings will be taken before the Human Rights Tribunal. Actually, I was interested in the New Zealand Law Society submission because it made quite a few significant statements. It criticises the law for, quote, not giving a reasonably clear description of exactly what conduct is prohibited, end quote. It rightly says, quote, there is no definition of gender identity in this legislation or any other New Zealand legislation, end quote. And they also say, quote, omissions to provide assistance, acceptance, support and understanding could count as a conversion practice in some context.
So not entirely ideal to be hearing the points of view of Simon Bridges, Simeon Brown and Family First from us, but hopefully it's better than nothing. Jen, you talked to different community members about the importance of safe spaces and places for LGBTQ plus people.
So I talked to Jennifer Shields from Qtopia, Minister Matthew Jack from Knox Church Ōtautahi, and Student Voice Coordinator Angus Howitt from Ara Institute of Canterbury.
It really should be common sense, but environments and communities should be a safe place for all, where you can express and be your true self. Jennifer Shields from Qtopia explains the positive impact of being a part of a rainbow-accepting community.
We have young people coming to us telling us that, you know, these groups and their spaces are really the only space they get to be themselves. And we also know from research that, you know, spaces like these contexts where gender diverse young people's name and pronouns are used correctly can reduce their risk of suicidal behaviour by over 50%. So spaces like this have having a really positive impact on their community's well-being.
So if you're in Christchurch and need an affirming group to be a part of, where can you go? What's on offer?
Absolutely. So we have four core social support groups here in Christchurch, a youth group for those aged 13 to 18, specialist support group for our trans and gender diverse whānau, a group for everyone over 18, and a group for families and kids under 13 as well.
In education spaces, the University of Canterbury has their very own Rainbow Advisor who supports LGBT students and colleagues, whereas at UTA there isn't a specific advisor role. But Student Voice Coordinator Angus Howitt is often used for advice due to being a part of the community himself.
A lot of them come to me as a quite a bubbly person in the queer community. I have a lot of students that come to see me just to talk about their problems or to ask for some support. I also have people come to me in the staff community as well when they're working with queer students but they don't really know the appropriate mechanisms or the things to talk about. So instead of waiting for students to have the skills and the interest in doing that we would front foot it and deliver some of those things and kind of like have a patch of queer grass and ask people to come to it as opposed to waiting for students to try and grow a patch of grass.
Both tertiary providers are changing things in their systems to support students. At UC, you can change your student ID to have your preferred name on it. And at UTA, they've done some work around pronouns.
One of the students had raised that as something that had come up while they were in their Zoom classes, that either they weren't able to put their pronouns and were getting misgendered in Zoom classes, not intentionally. And so then me and some colleagues connected with the IT department. A couple of days later, colleagues came back to us and they were like, oh yeah, we've done this and here's what we've come up with. What should we have in the list of pronouns that people can choose? And they came up with a whole bunch and then we made some edits and we made more customizable options and then some presets as well. It was a really positive response from lots of people.
However, education isn't the only space where we need to respect and affirm rainbow people's identity. In fact, anyone's identity. Religion is often a place where the LGBT community don't feel like they belong. Minister Matthew Jack talks to us about why that is.
They're all people who have been reading scriptures, and some things from the scriptures will speak to them more profoundly and powerfully than others.
Matthew Jack considers Knox Ōtatahi to be an affirming church and a safe place for members of the rainbow community. He's made changes to the service to show this.
We do change the text of hymns to be gender inclusive. We're doing our best with inclusive language and sometimes we fall over.
What can anyone, regardless of their sexuality, regardless of their gender, do to show support to those in the rainbow community?
Not making assumptions, letting people tell their own story and then respecting the story that they tell.
What we're trying to do is just be really good friends to each other, right? So if we're able to treat everyone in their lives the same way that we would our best friend. You know, if our best friend came to us and shared that they were part of the rainbow community, we want to extend that same kind of generosity and acceptance to, you know, absolutely everyone in our lives that we come across.
Woo! And that is it. 10 episodes in 6 weeks and we are done. I might go to bed now.
For those of you who've only just started listening to this podcast recently, we've covered topics like mental health, counterterrorism, kaupapa Māori, and harmful digital communication. So if this is one of the first you've heard, there's plenty more that we've made. And that's not even counting all of our conversations with Lan Farm, who's a regional council member and on local government New Zealand.
Your new best friend.
Apparently my new best friend. Jen, you'll know that in the last few episodes, we've been joking about handing out the cell phone numbers of the different politicians that we speak to, and while we can't really do that, I realised that I could give out yours. So for anyone who wants it, it's 021 458 61.
A product of the New Zealand Broadcasting School at UTA Institute of Canterbury.